All right, I'd like to welcome everyone to this rescheduled Public Outreach and Legislation Committee meeting. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there's a disruption of service, which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, the meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will be continued without remote participation. The remote participation is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, please click on the raised hand feature in Zoom. You'll be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of your phone number or by name. When it's your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. To the public attending in person, there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete and return to the administrator to help expedite public comments. The procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comment. I will then ask for discussion and questions from the committee members. The committee then will come to a consensus to move an item to the board for consideration. Any PowerPoints shown at tonight's meeting will be posted on the SCV Water website. We have all committee members except for Director Colley present, and we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Director Bronstein, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
My pleasure.
Stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Do we have any public comments on non-agenda items? No?
This time, thank you.
There is not. All right. We will start with our legislative consultant report. The first being Jeff Bowman from Vanscoy Associates.
Good evening. It's good to see everybody again tonight. My report this evening is going to be fairly short. The debt limit has ground Washington, D.C. to a halt. We have seen some positive movement since my last report about a month ago. Today in particular, it looks like they've got a couple of things that they agree on right now between the White House and the Congress. First of all, there's going to be what we call a clawback of unspent COVID-19 funds. It also looks like there will be some permitting reform for certain infrastructure projects moving forward. They still have some substantial work ahead of them. The debt limit, we're probably going to hit the debt limit sometime between June 1 and June 9. So the clock is ticking. You know, we got a holiday weekend coming up, so I'm somewhat optimistic they'll have some sort of a deal in place before the weekend. Members of Congress, the White House, typical elected officials like to get home, for the Memorial Day recess to interface with their constituents. So, as I like to say, nothing brings the deal together faster than the smell of jet fumes at National Airport during a holiday. There was also a little bit of good news today. I know the POL committee seems to be interested in the Colorado River. There looks like there's a deal in principle that calls for Arizona, California, Nevada to cut their water usage by 3 million acre feet over 3 years, or essentially 13% of their Colorado River allowance. This may mean that the federal government does not need to step in and impose cuts on the states. There was an interesting quote that I'll borrow here. This, again, has not been ratified. It hasn't even been submitted to the Department of the Interior, but the line I heard today was, it is important to note that this is not an agreement. This is an agreement to submit a proposal and an agreement to the terms of that proposal to be analyzed by the federal government. So in my written report, I mentioned the supplemental environmental impact statement. So these issues will likely be conflated, and hopefully we'll see resolution here that all the parties can agree to. In terms of PFAS, on May the 4th, Matt Stone participated in a virtual hearing on the EPA's PFAS Safe Drinking Water Act standard. We will likely also be providing written comments on the rulemaking, which are due to the docket by May the 30th. In our report, we mentioned that Senators Carper and Capito are working on a bipartisan PFAS bill that may have some limited liability exemptions for passive receivers like municipal utilities. I think that may gain some traction in a narrowly divided Senate. It's bipartisan, so anything that seems to make its way through the process these days has to be bipartisan. The one thing of note is that today Chairman Carper announced that he is not seeking re-election in 2024. So that sometimes has a kind of a chilling effect on legislation. In terms of fiscal year 2024 appropriations, last time I gave my verbal report, we only knew of Senator Padilla's request for the S-Wells project. I can now report that Congressman Garcia also made the request for the S-Wells project, which we're very fortunate because unlike senators, House members are limited to only 15 requests. So this is the second straight year the Congressman's gone to bat for us in the appropriations process. In terms of timing, the House and Senate will likely begin marking up the bills we care about, which are the Interior Environmental Protection Agency bill and the Energy and Water bill, which funds the Bureau of Reclamation. That'll probably take place after Memorial Day. Again, it's a late start this year. We're not anticipating Congress is going to finish any of the 12 bills by the end of the fiscal year, which is September the 30th. And so I'll close with that since we're all kind of sitting around waiting for the white smoke to appear on the debt limit. So thank you. Happy to take any questions you have for me this evening.
All right. Do we have any public comments?
We do not.
No. All right. Any questions, comments? Go ahead, Ms. Armington.
Thank you. So going back to what you said in terms of a bill that may help protect water agencies from liability related to PFAS. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Like, how would that help agencies like us? Because I know we're spending money on treatment facilities, but in terms, like, we haven't been found, like, liable for anything, right? I mean, up till now. So can you just talk a little bit about how it would protect us going forward?
Yeah, thank you, Director Armitage. You should have been more clear about that. So this is related to Superfund liability. Okay. So in terms of Superfund is a statute. It's intended as a cost recovery statute. The polluter pays. But liability under the statute, and I'm not a lawyer, but it's strict, joint, and several. So if you don't create the toxins, if you don't create the constituent, but you transport it, for instance, through your pipes, you're now liable. So in the administration, when they were writing their CERCLA proposed rule, I think they're trying internally to come up with a mechanism in the administration to sort of look at the enforcement mechanisms, but that won't shield municipal water utilities from citizen suits and other litigation. So I think, you know, what the senators are trying to do is create some sort of an exemption for passive receivers like those that didn't create the toxicity, didn't create the constituent, didn't create the chemical of concern, so that you're not subject to additional liability like you would for, you know, certain true polluters out there.
Thank you.
Anything else?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you. I know we're going to talk on the 31st about Jim. Hopefully that still goes. If it just stops at white smoke, I think we should be good, right?
I'm optimistic. Anytime that they're talking, anytime that they are trading paper, we're in a good spot. I think everybody knows the ramifications here of what happens if we cross the threshold. And so, you know, we were in a similar spot back in 2011. You know, it came down right to the last minute, just like this is. You know, we're going to be on a bit of a roller coaster. You know, we're going to get a lot of news reports over the next probably 100 or so hours, which is going to be a bit of a roller coaster. But I think they'll get there.
Question, since I know Director Armitage brought it up at our other meeting the other day too. I mean, refresh our memory, what happens? Like, do they start closing facilities? They stop funding things, all of the above? I seem to remember specifically national parks being closed at a certain point in the past.
There will be salaries. There will be salaries that they will not be able to pay, which essentially acts as a government shutdown. In some cases, I think, you know, the choice has become pretty drastic. You know, do they make Social Security payments?
Right.
Do they make Medicare payments? Do they pay for Medicaid? Do they pay to service the debt? These are choices that the Department of the Treasury is looking at right now.
So there's not a prescribed for, you know, first we cut this, then we shut that. It's kind of up to them at the time.
While we have crossed the debt limit, I think 6 or 7 times, the most recent was in the 1970s. There hasn't been anything to this extent. So I just don't know. The Department of the Treasury does have some discretion to make determinations in terms of where the cuts and where the pay or essentially who gets paid and who doesn't.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, we shall see. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, we have Dennis Alviani and Annalee Aiken from California Advocates.
Yes, thank you very much for the opportunity to join you this evening and continue with this. We appreciate this opportunity. And with that, we are right now entering probably the busiest 2-month time of the legislative session. There are 661 bills in the Assembly and I think 300 and something bills in the Senate that are all on the floors of their house of origin, and they have to move over to the other house by the end of next week. And so there's a lot of, scrambling and, amending of bills going on because of agreements that have been reached or disagreements that are still exist. And so there's a lot of lobbying and advocacy and education, and all that's going on. And so regardless of the bill, that's the challenge that these members have to deal with, is that many bills in a very short period of time. And then following that, just so you know, we go right into the second house policy bills, policy committees. Bills get referred immediately to the committees, and then we go into committee. Then from there, again, we do this all over again, appropriations and those types. And there's a parallel discussion I'm sure many of you have heard about called budget that has to be passed by June 15th. And then we go until essentially July 16th. We get out and they take a break. And that's when all the policy committees have to be done. And so that's kind of where we are right now. So now till middle July is very significant time, not only time-wise and busy, but this is when real negotiations are occurring, amendments are happening, and some more scrutiny are given to bills, because frankly, in the first House and the first policy committees, there is not nearly the scrutiny given to bills that a second House, a bicameral system allows. So that's where we are, just so you understand. A couple of the very high profile bills, and I think we've identified a few of them and went through that, is there's bills that have to deal with what people call the water rights bills. And it really has to deal with state, how the issues are going to be addressed on the powers of the water board. And as state water contractors, very concerned to give additional authority to the water board with very little oversight and direction on when they can curtail, how they do certain types of actions. And so that's an ongoing conversation. There's bills on the floor and or heading to the floor. And for instance, you know, we're advocating tomorrow. We have a meeting with Schiavo's office. Someone member Schiavo, just to, you know, brief them on the bills and find out if they have any questions and provide some additional information and that. And those are really about the two of the main water rights bills that are to state.
Last volume.
Sorry, that the water contractors and the Santa Clarita Valley Water are concerned about. That brings us into a couple of the other basic bills. There's one, 1594. It's on the front of the report. That bill would address this oversight that what CARB did, not including water utilities and sewer utilities and the utility trucks in the exemptions to the electrification. I think this is a concern. Obviously, it's shared greatly by many in the assembly. So we're supporting that bill, helping it get off the floor, and we'll, and hopefully trying to get that moved over there. And then that would require, then CARB would have to relook at that rule and adopt the definitions of what utility trucks would be available. Then as we go, you know, there's a few other bills that we can, you know, talk about. But at this point, I think there's value in passing it over for the budget, because this is the prime budget time, to Anna Lee, and she'll go over some of the key things with the water bonds and the budget.
Thanks, Dennis. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for having us tonight. The governor released his May revise on May 12th. So that is, as expected, there was a little bit more of a budget problem or budget deficit by about $9.3 billion for a $31.5 billion shortfall or deficit. You will see different words and different publications about that. But that has been a main topic this last week as people have been analyzing it, and there's been some legislative responses. To clarify, the total amount of proposed spending for this year is $306.5 billion. And last year, the governor signed a $308 billion budget. So just to clarify, our budget isn't shrinking by that much. It's definitely still a very difficult budget year, but a lot of the problems are with promised funding from previous years. So there are some creative ways that the governor has proposed to deal with that, but there's a lot of reductions in future years, cuts, and relevant for us here is $1.1 billion that he's proposing to shift from climate-related funding. And he's proposing to shift a lot of that funds from things that would be included in the state budget to provisions that will be included in an infrastructure bond that voters will see on their ballot in 2024. So I know we've been talking at the last few meetings about the different bond proposals, Aqua, and we have been very involved in getting different priorities in those. And they're still subject to a lot of changes, but during his May revision, the governor actually publicly committed to supporting an infrastructure bond because that was a significant part of his shifting and ways to mitigate the budget deficit. So those two are kind of aligned there, but the governor will probably be active and talking with legislative leadership about his priorities. Some specific ones that he stated was $270 million for water recycling and $60 million in SGMA implementation. So just again, those are two kind of pockets of money that were in the state, his budget proposal, that now he wants to be in a bond for voters to pass. So we'll be looking into seeing if that, you know, we'll probably just increase the amount because Aqua and we are already asking for funding for provisions like that in the bond. So those numbers will probably fluctuate as we dive deeper and look into the exact numbers that we're going to see in those proposals. He also included $290 million more for flood protection. So in DWR's budget, actually, for infrastructure, that actually went up in the May revise compared to January. Probably one of the only areas that did that. And then specific reductions to water to know also just included some for drought contingency, which makes sense. We saw some of that shifted to flood contingency, some for delta salinity barriers, and then for the land flex program that was also cut. And as Dennis said, the next step in the budget process is going to be the legislature's budget that has to be passed by June 15th. So, and then as legislative, you know, the process goes on, we'll see further amendments to the bond proposals. So the four major bond bills all passed out of the Appropriations Committee last week, and they were, two of them were amended and two of them just passed out as is. So all of the bond proposals that were in bills continue to live, and as I said, will continue to be amended. AQUA, and we're focusing most on AB 1567 and SB 867. That one's by Senator Allen. So those are probably going to be the ones that actually their language will make it onto the ballot, but the actual fine tuning of the language won't be happening until the end of this year and early next year as well. I'm going to kick it back over to Dennis.
So, yeah. And with that, we have to remember, you know, when I'm in a lot of meetings on water and natural resources and energy and all that, there's a whole lot of other demands on bond that people, you know, forget about. And it's, you know, education, it'll be affordable housing, the homeless area, they'll probably have some extra veterans, all those kinds of things require transportation. Don't forget about that. So those are, so, you know, a lot of people say, well, we'll just bond. You know, sometimes we need to keep it our focus on a little bit. That there's, you know, an assortment of needs. And if they say they can afford $20 billion in bonds, that isn't $24 billion in a climate water bond. That's, you know, spread across many needs. So just like to remind folks of that, because some people let it run away from them. But with that, those are some of the issues we've been dealing with. And appreciate, is there any question?
Do we have any public comment? No. No, we have no public comment. So any director questions or comments?
Go ahead. Thank you. So two questions. One is on the bond issue you were just talking about. I was a little confused at the end. You were talking about there are many issues that could be paid for through a bond. Are you saying that we're going to end up with a bond with all these issues, including water? Or because I know last year we were looking at water specific or climate resilience specific bonds. So I'm confused now about what type of bond or what's included in the bond. That's one question related to that. And then, you know, I know we have, 2 to 3 different bond bills right now. What's that process? Does it get pared down to just the one then that gets selected to then go out to the voters to vote on? So that's my first question. And then I have one more, but I'll let you answer those first.
Sure. Let me, I'll just jump on it. I've been involved in many of these negotiations. First of all, they'll establish a total comfort level, we'll say, with what you can afford. And essentially, they don't want to get the because it's debt and you have to pay interest on it and those kind of things. So, you know, certain entities do not want to let it go too hard. You say, well, that would be the conservative. Sure, there's conservative, but there's also entities who live off the budget, which might be public employee unions, some of those. So there's always this interesting dynamic that they have to kind of, the administration, treasurer, legislative leaders will come to an amount that they feel comfortable with. Then they start to divide that by policy. And you can imagine the transportation guys are jockeying, the climate and natural resource people are jockeying, education might be doing that, higher ed for what's needed at community colleges and universities. So you can imagine that. And so then they start, you know, the pie's this big and start, you know, slivering it. Now you say, it sounds like I just articulated a very orderly discussion. This is not orderly. This is true politics and pro tems and they're listening to their members and there's different legislative leaders and there's a lot of jockeying. The governor has his view and he may have views on other offices in the future. So he's got certain things that he wants to be able to deliver. And so that starts to politically divide the pie of whatever they think is a suitable amount of things. And, you know, it might start off at 20 million and ends up 23 billion, but you get it and how that goes. So it's sounds orderly. It is not, but it is somewhat standard in how they get to those numbers. No, there will likely be one bill, unless you could get two. Sometimes the policies in one bill and then some of the constitutional and things might be in another bill, and they both go on together. But it would be one vote, most likely one initiative that you are voting on, because they don't want to make it, you know, confusing and two. So essentially, it's most likely to be one bill. Also, that's horse trading. You know, Alan happens to be a chair of one of the committees, so, you know, he's in a good position. You know, Garcia's been doing this a long time, been very involved in this, so he may be in a good position. Of those ones, I would say probably those two are the highest. And then they end up co-authoring each other's bills, and they can all say, hey, I co-authored it or whatever. But, and that's really at a pay grade, you know, that's the members decide that, and who gets it. And maybe the Senate gets the natural resources bond and Alan gets that, and the assembly gets the transportation portion, and that, or somebody gets veterans, and they just, it becomes horse trading. These are two-thirds vote bills. So it does take, you know, a significant amount of the entire caucus to make that occur. And then if some of the caucus may not want to go up, there might be Republicans that come in. So, you know, two-thirds vote bills are always a little bit more challenging. I think that answered both those, or the one question. Is that correct?
Yeah, thank you. The second question I have is on the bill related to the CMEX mine and water protection that Assemblywoman Schiavo and Senator Scott Wilk are working on together. Is that still alive? And if so, can you just tell me a little bit more about it? Because I feel like we should be supporting it. We should be vocal about supporting it if it's what I think it is.
I'd have to look that one up. I'll be honest with you. I do remember the conversation. I don't know where it is, if it got off of suspense or not. I did talk to their office several times.
Just to clarify, so
I apologize. I don't have
1631.
Did it get off suspense?
I think, yeah, it's on the, do you happen to know the number? Sorry, I just want to make sure I have the right.
I was prepared with the number either.
That's okay. No, I just was looking at our bill report, and I think it did make it off suspension.
Yeah, I think it is 1631.
Yes. So that is currently on third reading on the assembly floor. So it did make it out of appropriations. And yeah, we can continue to communicate your position on that.
Okay. And then do you know about it?
I haven't been too involved in this bill, but happy to dive in on it.
Because I imagine, I don't know, Steve, if you have anything to add, it helps protect our water quality in our area, right?
I think if I'm remembering the bill right, and I was pulling it up here just to make sure that I have it right, it was really going after the application. Am I remembering that right, Dennis?
It is.
Yeah.
So there was a water rights application that was filed a long time ago by the mine, essentially to appropriate water for purpose of dust control and the processing of the aggregate at the site. And so what this does is tries to do more of a administrative solution to the issue, meaning that they want them to refile their application. Those applications can sit before the board. I mean, this one has been a few decades now. And so the thought process was to make them reapply, which reopens kind of the administrative process for people to weigh in on. So you could, at that point in time, then weigh in on water quality or quantity and those types of things. Kind of another reset of the clock and the environmental review process for that portion of the project. That's how I understand how it works. But I don't know, Dennis, if that's right or wrong.
They didn't make it specific to CMEX, so it doesn't say anything about that specific applicant. They said anything over 30 years would have to be reopened, and then, you know, CEQA and all the things that go on with it. And so I am familiar with the bill, but not, but we have not taken any position on it. You guys tell us what to do. So
that has been part of the challenge, is because it's not CMEX specific.
Okay.
there are a lot of other, even, you know, friendlier folks, water agency folks, that have had applications like this before the state board. And so there's a concern when you do the broad brush that you knock out some others that may be in a position that's not so adversarial. So yeah. That's kind of the, we've always somewhat kind of just played it in the middle.
Okay.
For that reason, because of the unintended consequences of some of the other applications that are before the board.
Okay. And was this just to, because I know the city's against the CMEX line, right? Was it really just to kind of give them a tool?
Yes. Yeah. It's to reopen kind of the administrative process on it.
The delay is like a delay.
It is. And you get to go back through the whole process again. And so, yes, that's quite intensive and can be utilized to communicate very clearly your objections to their project.
Okay.
But yeah, this one did not limit it to CMEX. It was a broader brush than that.
And is the rest of the water world kind of staying out of it?
I don't know, Dennis, are there people that are actively advocating against it that you're aware of?
Yeah, not much of the water world is it's kind of a, you know, viewed as a regional discussion. So it is not, yeah, I'm not aware. I actually saw people sending around a discussion document to oppose the bill because of what Steve mentioned earlier, which was it's not narrowly tailored. It takes any bill, any entity that is has a permit out, and so some people were like, "Hey, this could affect, you know, a significant amount of them." Now, I don't know how much they got on that, you know, how many folks they got, you know, to oppose it, but, you know, on that, but I can pull up real quick, tell you who's opposed and who's support. City of Clannery, City of Santa Clarita Valley Chamber, opposition is CMEX, and then opposition, unless amended, is BIA, Construction Employers, Southern California Contractors, and United Contractors. So I think those are the folks that are concerned that it's too broad. It could open up, you know, other permits that have been out there.
Okay. Interesting. Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. And that's a good refresher. Anything else? I just have a couple of quick questions, Dennis. I didn't hear you mention anything about targeting water infrastructure for the purposes of expediting it. That was talked about before, and also Jeff talked about it at the federal level. Anything going on with that?
So Friday, the governor announced an infrastructure package to help expedite, for lack of a better term, the infrastructure, including water infrastructure. And so, and when went through, and he did an executive order. The executive order basically, you know, has a infrastructure czar person. My understanding is going to be Gail Miller in his office, works on infrastructure, bring all the secretaries together, and they're supposed to create essentially a list of high priority infrastructure projects and then raise those up for focus and permitting and that. And it's really expedite as much as possible under the existing, you know, structure. Then he just rolled out, and I'm going to let Anna Lee do this because she just read them all and put together a nice little matrix, which we need to send out to all of our clients. But, you know, that was on Friday, 10 trailer bills. And so, Anna Lee, what do we know about those 10?
Yeah. So he, released 10 trailer bills that his intent is for those to be a part of the legislature's budget that they passed by June 15th. A lot of them are related to either transportation specifically, some expedite judicial review of challenges to certain CEQA claims, and that includes water, transportation, and clean energy projects. Another one would actually allow DWR to choose 8 different projects to use the design build pilot program. So basically they wouldn't have to, you know, have a complete design before soliciting bids. So something there to expedite infrastructure projects. A couple of other ones, just to know, water, sorry, I'm looking at my chart right now, but one would refine the Delta Reform Act, and that would streamline the review processes for projects related to the Delta Plan. So that's also important for us to know. And then there's one that removes a sunset provision for certain environmental responsibilities. That's for transportation. A couple others are more related to transportation. One, you know, about wildlife crossings, job order contracting. But like I said, a couple of them do have direct relation to water, and those we've seen in print, but they don't have bill numbers yet.
Okay.
We can certainly send that chart out to you.
Certainly not a blanket push for water infrastructure to get expedited. It sounds like select projects.
Yeah, and he also has the challenge that he needs to find legislators that are willing to author them and then, you know, get it through the process. They'll have to go. It's a much, much more streamlined process through the budget. And, you know, lots of things can get put in there. But again, I think a lot of entities will be looking at these about what you're doing, you know, making sure that they still have the opportunity to have appropriate environmental review. Anything that touches the Delta will be very, very controversial. And we asked Annalie to put all that in and review them today, and we'll send that out to Steve and, you know, the staff probably tomorrow morning.
Okay. And lastly, just remind me of the process with suspense file. Is that it's like dead unless somebody pulls it situation, or what is it's in the suspense file mean?
Well, so this, you know, we have to turn in our reports before this meeting, obviously. So like you get published and everything. So May 18th was where the suspense file was voted off. The ones that, so they put all the bills that have a cost, significant cost, into suspense. So they sit there. And so no matter when they came to the Appropriations Committee, they get held on suspense is what that's called. Then on one day every year, and they'll do it again in the second house, they go and they just read right through real quickly and vote out or hold all these bills. About 80% of the bills got voted out. So that's off suspense. They get voted onto the floor. 20% were held approximately. I think it was like 21% and 79%, but don't, you know, on average on both houses. So these bills that, you know, when we did the report, some of them were on suspense, but now they've come off suspense. And so that's, you know, 1594, the one on utilities, the water rights bills, those have all been voted out of the committee. They're no longer on suspense.
Okay. Had they not been voted out, they'd be dead right now.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. If there's no other questions, we will move on. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Thank you. All right. Lastly, in this category, we have Hunt Raleigh with Poole and Shaffrey.
Good evening, committee members. Just a couple of highlights in addition to what I have in my written report. Subsequent to the report, the WASC for the Safe Clean Water Program, Measure W, did meet for the first time since February, met in person. We'll be meeting in person going forward at the City of Santa Clarita. Major issue that came up was, and you may have heard this in the past for those of you who have been on the committee, there were efforts to do a pathogen study, a 5-year study. Our WASC had voted in favor of that and to pay its pro rata share. Only a couple others had agreed a year ago. Now all 9 have agreed. So that's going to the Board of Supervisors, maybe by June or July, if approved, will then start that process. So that was interesting news. There's also a lot of discussion about getting better data and current data on the programs that have been funded and where they stand in the process. And hopefully we'll get that better clarity at our next meeting. As far as the County Board of Supervisors, they've started their budget process, as I've indicated, and we'll have more information later on. In addition, they did receive and approve the acceptance on April 18th of their almost $4 million in funding from the 2021 state budget for the Integrated Water Management Plan. There was not a list of specific projects that we're going to, but we can look and see if any of those affected our area. City Council, again, not a lot of activity, continuing with their significant budget funding for what they call the overlay and slurry program, almost a $4.5 million. Their annual program on community development block grant funding, which goes for homeless and senior services, but does have some money that they've continued to set aside for potentially affordable housing. And then at the last meeting on May 9th, the main discussion point that was of interest was whether or not the city should do a separate no-kill shelter or work more closely and be more supportive of the existing LA County shelter in Gastech. And the decision was to work more closely with that shelter. The city budget discussions will be upcoming probably in June, I think, and when it will get to the council, and we'll see where that stands. Usually it's quite conservative, but a lot of reserves that they usually have along with their capital improvement program. So we'll see where we are with that. And then we will have some resolution, it looks like, of the city council districting issue. The council is meeting on May 30th with the expectation that they will do two things. Approve a map that would go to the judge as part of their settlement agreement with the plaintiff's council and decide which seats will be up in November 2024. And as you'll recall, one of those has to be the approximately 47% Latino voter, or not voter, but population district. And then either Councilman Gibbs or Council or Mayor Pro Tem Smythe's district. Only two go up in 2024. That decision would be made on May 30th. There's some contention with the plaintiff's council, if you've monitored these hearings at all, or even the minor changes which the council is making, primarily to just keep communities intact, which is one of the goals of the law, is being attacked. There's clearly some feeling by the plaintiff council that there may be other reasons why it's being done. I'm not quite sure what that would possibly be, because there's no there's any incumbent council person who lives in the minority district, they're not up until 2026, so most likely wouldn't run in 2024. So we'll see what happens. It still has to go to the judge for approval, and if the plaintiff council disagrees with it, it could still be changed. That's basically my report. Open to any questions.
All right, thank you. Do we have any public questions online? Between none in person. All right, any director questions or comments?
No.
Very short and sweet tonight. So I don't see any questions or comments. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Take care. All right. We will move on to item number 4, presented by Steve Paul, discussion of local legislative advocate position.
Yes, thank you, Chair Goodside. So wanted to run through with the committee tonight. It's a kind of a unique point in time here for the agency with Ms. Martin's retirement.
And the committee had asked us the last time we had authorized the local government affairs contract to kind of look at a different way to potentially deliver that service for the agency. And so we have been doing that. And so tonight it's kind of a culmination of a few different things that are going on with that right now. You'll probably recall we had presented about whether there was interest in hiring a local government affairs specialist full-time for the agency. That was received well by the committee and then ultimately the board. And if the budget passes in this next month, that position will be funded in the next fiscal year cycle. So not this one right before us, but the following one. And so I think from the staff's perspective, we were looking at different ways to kind of handle the interim period of time. Ms. Martin has indicated that she would be willing and able to kind of provide the bridge kind of this time before we get to having and recruiting and having a full-time staff member. So thought it was a unique opportunity that we wanted to bring to the committee and get your thoughts on it. So basically what the thought process is that in this, you know, interim period, Ms. Martin would perform kind of the duties of what our current local advocate is providing for us. Right now, the concept is to do a hybrid. So basically, we would engage Ms. Martin, and there's a very specific way that you have to do that with PERS retirement, that we would have to run through that process. It's called a retired annuitant process. You have to have a defined, you know, scope of work that's not being performed by staff currently and things like that. We've run through that through legal counsel, and we have the ability to do that. It would require the board adopt a resolution. And so we would need to take that through that process, and then we could work with Ms. Martin. We've put together right now, the existing local advocate contract is basically a retention type style contract, right? So it's $5,000 a month, regardless of the work that is done or not done, but it's mainly to have the person available to and not be conflicted and those types of things to be able to perform the work that we're looking for. What we did is we went through kind of the list of that scope of services and provided that here of what the services that Ms. Martin would take on. And we've got an estimate of the amount of time that we think that would take and how much money that time would need to be. And so we come up roughly probably about half of the current contract by running through more of a time material type approach. The thought process on this was that we would still have the ability to retain the Poole and Chaffery firm, but it would be transitioning to a time and materials basis, so that if we had a special project that we wanted to advocate on a certain way for our local government affairs process, we would engage just basically on time and the material to do that rather than a retention. We have been discussing that with Mr. Brawley. He's not 100% sure what direction the firm will want to go. So we haven't reached conclusion on that yet, but I think regardless of that, I think the staff is looking to move forward with Kathy's retention, kind of to perform those local government duties in this, we'll call it the next year period of time until we fully retain a full-time local government position. So that is the desire to get feedback on. That's our recommendation. And would love to hear what you guys think about that, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any public comment? Was mine?
Any questions from directors, comments, thoughts? Go ahead.
Sorry. So a couple questions. Mm-hmm. One is looking at the scope of work. Well, first of all, genius way of keeping Ms. Martin's talents connected to the water agency. as long as possible. We're going to hold on to that as long as possible. Okay, so my first question is after looking at the scope of work, what are additional tasks that Mr. Brawley would tap into, or we would tap into?
I think it would be more project based. So yeah. if we have a certain thing that came up that we wanted to specifically advocate on, and we thought that we could, it would be helpful if we had somebody with the talents and experience and relationships mm-hmm. that Mr. Brawley and their firm has, then we could, we would scope out that aspect of it and be able to retain a contract just to do that type of service. Mm-hmm. So right now it's envisioned that the things that kind of the normal day-to-day, local government affairs activities as defined in the scope would be performed by Ms. Martin.
Thank you. And then the only other, I guess it's more of a comment than a question, is in looking at the scope of work, I would love to see, and I don't know if it's possible, if you talk about connections with, our local government, state government, federal government, but also schools. I wonder if there's a way to foster our relationship with the William S. Park School District and COC as well in any way. So just throwing that out. And then in the scope of work number 8, talking about fostering relationships with other organizations, and you list the Castaic Town Council, but I just want to remind you that there is also the Val Verde community. What do they call themselves? Val Verde Area Council, maybe. They also meet on a monthly basis. And so just want to make sure and remind you that they exist as well. And their meetings are very similar to the Castaic Town Council meeting. So that's it. And I mean, this seems like a great plan, so thank you. Val Verde Civic Association, that's what they're called.
What is it?
Val Verde Civic Association, I think.
We had a, do you think?
I think it's a great idea.
Okay.
I mean.
Okay. So I saw in there that this could be over 960 hours a year. Remind me, I know you said next year, so that's starting July 2024. We're looking to have a staff person. So this would be for essentially a full year from now to do that. Okay. I just want to make sure. And full Chaffery would stop immediately?
The existing the existing contract has a 30-day and either party can terminate the existing contract. So either we would go through that or a process to transition to the time and material type contract.
I had put in here for a start date of August 1st as opposed to July 1st, only because
has to go for the full board too,
right? We have it tentatively scheduled to go to the board on June 20th.
Right.
But I don't know from the CalPERS side if there's much process that needs to be done. And I'm going to be gone for a couple of weeks in July
for
a retirement trip.
Just a couple of weeks. Then you're back at it.
Yes. Oh, okay. So I'll just lay low for July and come back.
Good plan. Okay. All right. And then I like the mention of the schools. I continue to think, especially on conservation and things like that, it's important to have contacts there. I was thinking, I think this is a good time to continue to refine what our local government affairs person will do long term. Because one thing, I want to make sure we see the value of reporting and time spent. So, although it's interesting to hear about the animal shelter, for instance, which is very interesting to me, having three adopted pups.
Kind of sad that's what they decided to do.
What?
I'm kind of disappointed that that's what they decided to do, but.
Yeah, you know. Well, I could, don't get me started. I could have done that lot. But the point being, from a water standpoint, I want to make sure that we're using our time on water issues. So think about or let us know, you know, does it make sense to get, if there's no water issues or even water adjacent issues on a city council agenda, does it make sense to have someone sit through all of that and listen just in case? Or can we skip that and maybe target some of these other groups? So like maybe the school is talking about their utility budget and you need to know who to talk to there. Or, you know, I know that, again, water adjacent, BizFed, BIA, the Valley, the San Fernando Valley Business Association, which I think is also called VIA, has, you know, interest in infrastructure projects and moving infrastructure. So maybe, you know, would the time be better spent getting to know some contacts that are participating there, like figure out who really affects water and hang out with those people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cause you know, I think just to go to the city council, just every single time, I don't see the value in that myself. So maybe we can do that. And then also I remember from being on some of the chamber committees, you know, you see the Edison government affairs people, the gas company government affairs people participating in groups like that and, you know, being a resource through those. And I know that those are listed, but, you know, establishing us as a community resource. So if somebody else, let's say the schools want to do something with their water budget, they'll view this government affairs person as who we contact to figure out what to do. So, you know, how do we get this person to be the resource that people think of, like they think of calling the gas company person or the Edison person of, you know, as a starting point for water questions. So I think it would be good to have you feel all that out before we get a person in the role. Like, how can we be most effective? That's the short way of saying what I just said.
That's good feedback.
Yeah. Not just repeat what Phil and Sheffrey was doing, but, you know, what do we need out of it? So I think that'd be good. But I support the recommended action, and you did say it's coming to the board.
I just had April do a placeholder for it based on the independent on the outcome here at tonight's meeting.
Okay.
We were going to hit it.
I think that will be good. And then, of course, we'll be recruiting during the spring for this, right?
Yeah, we're going to have to go through a whole, like you say, we're going to spend quite a bit of time the final job class.
Okay.
So I think that feedback is very helpful.
Isn't it in the position control thing that is coming?
We put it in as a placeholder.
So it's not yet defined.
Right. So we'll go through a whole, you know, industry kind of look scan of what others are doing.
Okay.
Things like what's the city doing, some other entities, and try to understand what their kind of scope that their group is doing. And then we'll eventually develop a job description and come forward with that at that point in time.
That reminds me of another one, trash. Trash guys usually have a government affairs person.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a liaison for sure.
Yeah, like a liaison. So that'll get incorporated into a more firm job description. Will that have to come back?
I don't think it will. What will come back, and if you want to see it, absolutely it can. But what will come back is when we firm up the salary portion of it. So we did a kind of high level scan, looking around.
Okay,
and
but just to refine that band.
Yeah. So once we get the full job classification, then we'll be able to set the appropriate compensation.
But it won't have to come back to budget.
It should. It may, you know, require a little bit of an adjustment in the next budget cycle, that we do a 2-year budget cycle if it's in or out of the range, but it should be fairly close.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Anything else on this? No. Thank you. All right, we have consensus that is going to the June 24th for approval.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
All right. Next one, item 5 is communication manager's report presented by Kathy Martin.
Thank you. Just a couple of quick things. You all first chance to meet Kevin. This is day one for him. So he is getting quite education. It's first day. Yeah, just throwing stuff at him. I'm sure speak for him too, super thankful that the agency, Steve and Matt, allowed us to have this overlap time. You know, that's not common in a job handoff. So for us to be able to sit side by side for a couple of weeks makes me feel better. Leaving. And I know, you know, Kevin's got the great support of our whole team that can help him find anything after I'm gone, but really thankful for that. Let me just give a couple of quick updates on some projects that we're working on. Our teachers, our education program, you know, when schools are out in the summer, they usually do environmental sciences program for high school, where the students just sign up individually themselves. It's not like a whole class. That's something new they are bringing this summer, based on the requests that they get from scouts, is having a 2023 summer scout days. And so they have two programs, one for the younger scouts, grades 1 through 5, and older 6 through 12. All kinds of fun programs, water treatment, facility tour. A lot of the activities will fulfill badge requirements so they can come and earn or work towards different badges. So those start, they have 2 days set aside for the older group and 2 days set aside for the younger group in July. So we're excited.
Is it Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, both?
Yeah.
Both?
Yes.
Okay.
We have a page up on the website. I don't think it is published. Yeah, we were waiting for just a couple of approvals for the teachers to finish reviewing it. But I'll send you out a link when we have it all. But yeah, we're excited. Something new for us to do. And the teachers just put together a really great curriculum for what the kids will do for those couple of hours that they're with us. And it's not, I mean, it's like you've got to learn these things, be able to answer these questions back and fill out this treatment plant map and know what each step is. So it's going to be pretty in-depth.
Do you know, so how far out are they casting this net to capture scouts? Because we've got like Greater LA Council, right? Or are they just sticking with like the Santa Clarita troops and groups first?
That would be likely to be customers here. So trying to keep to one's
service area. Okay.
That would be our preference. We'll see. And this is based on, like, we would just get scout leaders calling us looking for either Eagle Scout projects or different things like that. Get several college notes over the course of the year. And so they just in response put this together.
So they're going to call us, or we're going to call them and let them know?
We are doing outreach. We just today finalized the content on the website. We got our registration form up. And so Lindsay is working with the educators on communication plan and getting the outreach. And they have a list of ones that are already interested, but they've got a number of different ways that. And one of our teachers went to a local leaders, like scout leaders, council planning meeting. I don't know the hierarchy, but they attended one of those to tell them about the program.
Can we see if this is applicable to like Boys and Girls Club? They have leadership programs for their kids. I mean, at multiple levels, not only just learning, but also even in career exploration. Can we make sure that when we're communicating, we include Boys and Girls Club? And did they still do YMCA Indian Guides? Anybody? Don't know. That was,
I think so, but didn't our local
it's closed.
YMCA closed down?
They still have, like, my granddaughter goes to the YMCA after school program at her school.
Yeah.
So they do. I know they have some school site programs at that.
So, yeah. Make sure those are on the list besides just Boys and Girls Scouts. I mean, where appropriate. But those things all run in the summer, too. So
that'd be good. Let me check. I know that we're allowing, like, it doesn't have to be sign up as a patrol, pack, troop, or individual with adult chaperones. So it doesn't have to be like just a scout leader coming saying, I'm signing up my troop, an individual scout. And how they just have to have chaperones with them. Yeah, let me talk to them about Boys and Girls Club. Mm-hmm. Bridgeport Park. His development is occurring there. Planting is going on. We've been going out and getting regular video, drone footage, and photos. So Laura's working on a social media video just to do a quick post on updating on the progress. And they are planning a groundbreaking for late August, early September. They're going to work with the principal at Bridgeport Elementary to schedule that during the day at a time where the students could participate. So that's progressing rapidly. The CCNR, our water quality report, is done and posted online in English and Spanish. So we are always way ahead of schedule. Mm-hmm. The outreach will start later this week with a press release, some social media. Customer care will do their legally required email notification to everybody. There's a whole process of that. And April's running the legal notice for us. So the deadline to have it out is by July 1. So we get it done here so that there's time for one whole rate or one whole billing cycle to go through with the required notifications. But it is online on our water quality page now. Just went up yesterday or today. And last thing, the repair assistance program. That's also getting ready to launch. We will begin accepting applications for it on June 1st. And messaging starts this week. And next week, Laura is working on translation. There's a series of letters and communications that will go out to people who express an interest. So we're working on all the Spanish translations for those that get ready to rock and roll on that.
That's
all I got.
Quick question. I saw at legislative planning today that we're getting a presentation on the survey in the future. Is this committee going to hear survey information before the full board?
We weren't going to, only because we knew it needed to be the full board. Mm-hmm. So rather than making you guys all sit through twice,
okay,
we'll just have it
okay.
The board. I already have the final report and the consultant's PowerPoint. So all those will be in the packets because we have a full week to see that before he comes to the board meeting that night.
All right, any other questions?
So for the consumer confidence report, I think I asked you last week, the tree people are doing an event. It's this week. So It's Thursday evening. It's a virtual event that's hosted by StanTech and Tree People, where they're going to talk about indoor drinking water quality and how to read a consumer confidence report. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we can help promote that event in case some of our customers would be interested in listening in. I think it's always important to help customers understand how to read the CCR because it can get, there's so many numbers and values. And I think the more we can help them understand how to read it so they are confident in the water they're drinking, the better. Mm-hmm. So,
or we could do a little, they're so good at doing those little videos. Mm-hmm. On our website, could we do a video clip, on just this column means this column means that.
Yeah,
I'm just wary of, although StanTech is, a good firm, which one do we promote? Do we promote the StanTech Tree People one? Do we promote the League of Republican Women's thing? I mean, I think we need to stay neutral on supporting outside or events or rather do one of our own. Because if we tell people to go to Tree People, then we got to tell people to listen to the Rotary one or, Republican Women or whatever. So I'd rather see us.
Let me check on that because we have been meeting with Tree People and StanTech for a couple of months. That was part of the public water treatment plant tour that we did last 2 weekends ago. Mm-hmm. And there's a tap water testing thing that they had rolled out in LA County down that way that they were trying to figure out if there was a way to do it here. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not recalling what the last conversation was. I know that we've been plugged into this event. We've been part of some of the planning meetings, letting them know what does and doesn't apply to our customers. So there are things that we declined to participate in and others that we've been trying to support
or help. Yeah.
You know, or at least let people know about.
I mean, I personally think that if there's something, let's say if the League of Republican Women put out something that's beneficial for our customers, like they're putting on a thing that's explaining something that's relevant to us, I have no problem saying, hey, go check out this thing that they're talking about, the thing that's relevant right now to us, and go check out this place over here that's doing something that is relevant to us. I think that in general, promoting is one thing, but I think it's like when it's like, hey, here's a little tidbit that's specifically on literally what we're releasing right now.
Yeah.
And those videos, like, they're great. And I think we should do them, but they're also time consuming. So I'm just saying, if there's one that's just happening, it might be beneficial.
We'll find out what it is that they're presenting and how much it overlaps. But the how-to part is or the points well taken. We do a lot of outreach on here it is, but we need to take that to the next step.
Right. Like how to check for a leak in your toilet, right? We put out a video on that, but I would think a consumer confidence report is pretty important. And yeah, just, I don't know. And now that we're having, you know, additional help down the road, I think, I asked Kathy to clarify our sponsorship events. Like, we're not doing filling stations for everybody. There's going to be a focus. Sierra Club did a water forum that was very interesting. And I listened in, but there was some information in there that I would say is less than accurate. So if we're looking at 30 agencies in town that are saying, putting on water stuff, how do we know what's accurate, what's not, what we're going to point people to or not? Do we have time to vet all of those? As I said, I know Santec is, you know, a regular consulting firm, but I don't know their source of information or what they're going to say. And if we're pointing people to things that might be misinforming people, that could be a problem too. So I maybe the staff can comment on, you know, if there's a role for us to participate in these community groups when they have water topics, or should we stay out of it? Like, what's your professional opinion on how to do that so we don't get all willy-nilly?
Okay. I think Three People has been good about inviting us in. And then, like I said, some of the things just wasn't a fit for our areas. There might be for some.
But also, if they're inviting you, make sure other people know they can invite you.
Yeah.
Rather than hearing from somebody that might not know what they're talking about. If Pleasure to Canyon HOA, which I see the signs is having their HOA meeting, if they want to have a water, you know, is everybody aware that it's a resource?
Yes. That fits in with one of the new things on my proposed scope was Speakers Bureau.
Yeah.
And so basically, it's finding all of those potential partners and resources and letting them know that we have people that will.
That would be so good because, I think when people get the information, they're excited to hear it. But, you know, what they say about correcting, it takes longer to correct misinformation.
Okay,
they gotta know we're here.
I mean, if you could do also is ask if they are recording the event, and then you could review it, and if it looks like great information to share out and you feel comfortable with it, then maybe provide a link to customers, right, for that. Maybe that would be within your comfort level more.
Yeah, their comfort level too. Yeah, I think we're going to just have more coverage locally, it sounds like, with this new staff position to be able to cover.
Specific coverage for sure.
Yeah. I think we can do more with that going forward.
Right.
Well, I don't know if it's a, like, if it's an appropriate question or not. I was wondering about, never mind, it's not a, it's, wasn't it, it's, I think, a little bit off topic, so.
We can ask it later.
Yeah, I'll ask it later.
Okay. Okay. Did we ask for a public comment after the staff report, or did I forget?
I think you're good. We don't have a public comment.
Did, but after
yeah.
Kathy, we already did ask?
No. After Kathy, no.
Okay. I forgot to ask for public comment after mm-hmm. you spoke, so go ahead.
Yes.
You have 3 minutes. Good.
I have a question. I see you're doing a lot of good things. I'll have to say that. My concern is what I'm seeing, and that enough people aren't being told that their water here, they shouldn't be drinking it. We haven't for a long time. And I see one reference here to a, it is all very small, about a well for PFAS treatment. I believe almost all of your wells are going to have PFAS treatment. And I think the public has a right to know that and know that that's what your, what's in your water supply. And I don't see any effort to do that. And it needs to be done before it's done some other, in some other manner. But I've been watching it for, I see one here and it's $5 million to treat. That's what should be getting out to this community. All the rest is immaterial if what they're drinking is something they wouldn't really want to drink if they knew what was happening. And there has been no effort at all by this organization to do that. None whatsoever. And we haven't. We don't drink your water. We don't cook with it. Anything like that. And I see small families and I wonder if they're being told about this and that they should have a choice to know whether the water they're receiving is really. Now, if you can tell me that somehow you are treating and you know that that isn't going out in your water supply, I would like to see it in writing and know that. Should I be warning my neighbors, you know, if you that have small children? And I haven't done that this far, but unless you can tell me that you are doing that, maybe something like that has to be done. And surely you're aware of it. If you're not, then you shouldn't be sitting up here. But this is a major issue for our community because almost all of your wells are have PFAS. Now, if I'm wrong, like if you just say, no, that's not true, I'd like to hear it.
Thank you for your comment. Your time is up.
I wonder why.
Question, the Consumer Confidence Report, that is... covers MCLs and drinking water standards, right? So anything that has an established standard would be disclosed.
That's correct, yes.
The PFAS, because it doesn't have a standard, is not mentioned in there? Or
It's actually generally mentioned, but it's because of its status
right now
as a drinking water unregulated contaminant.
Uh-huh. So there's a section on it in there, though.
There is, yeah. I think one of the things we've really tried to do is communicate early and often on PFAS as
right.
a subject. In fact, we've received awards for it, right, Kathy?
Yes.
Yeah. And so there's a whole section
on
the website to talking through the challenge that PFAS is presenting to
not just our drinking water system, but the whole state and mm-hmm. the country. And as we're dealing with looking at these new, you know, contaminants in a different way, I think for now, I'm comfortable making the statement that we're meeting all the health standards. And mm-hmm. so that's what's being communicated. We report out on the levels, the kind of advisory levels that have been put forth. And we are moving forward with treating the drinking water at the locations that
right.
have the contaminants.
Right. So it's not silent on that.
And the well said.
Can I find this information?
We'll follow up with you afterwards.
And the wells that right. do exceed that number are turned off.
Right.
There. Right. So we'd like to see it.
Okay. Well, they can help you afterwards.
Be happy to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Were you going to say any? That was a public comment. I'm sorry, I'm kind of doing it out of order. Was your report complete or did you want
to? Yeah, it was.
Okay. I should have done that before we did director comments, but any other comments on five from directors?
I'm still super excited about the Scout.
Yes.
That is cool. Amazing. And there's so many kids who are Scouts in this valley that can benefit from that. So that's brilliant. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Committee planning calendar.
Nothing to update.
Nothing? No changes? Okay.
We'll add to the June agenda to talk about that. If you wanted to come to the committee to talk about the our participation events and criteria we use and all that.
Oh yeah, you're gonna have that. Thank you.
Give me a good deadline.
Yeah, it's because I hadn't heard what our current policy is, and you don't have a written policy mm-hmm. yet. Just in case people ask us, hey, can we get water bottles? Can we get a filling station? You know, what's our criteria and what's the process? So that will be explained by that written document she's working on. Okay. All right. Well, hearing nothing else, we are at adjournment. Kevin, we saw your notice and a little bit about your background from Kathy. Anything else you want to comment?
I guess any questions about myself, I can reiterate, I spent the last 6 years with the city of Santa Clarita in their communications office. I'm very well-versed in the city and earlier on the local landscape, and I'm just very excited to get going. But I look forward to meeting with each of you individually going forward to learn more about how you work best with Kathy and how I can best serve.
Terrific. Welcome.
Yeah. Are we still on good terms with the city? Making sure.
We've always been on good terms in the communication. I don't know what happens up here.
Thank you.
All right,
he's changing that now. Kind of liaison.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.